Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast, where two mental health therapists and a fitness coach explore the interweaving connections of mind, body, and spirit. Every episode covers an area of this connection and how we can reimagine ourselves and our world when we see these connections more clearly.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast. Today, we are continuing a series exploring movement as therapy. In this series, we are taking a look at how movement heals our body and our mind. So let's get started. With us today, we have Tracy Maxfield, neuromuscular therapist with Inbounce Neuromuscular Therapy. Hi, Tracy. Thanks for being with us.
Hello. Thank you.
So to get started, could you tell us a little bit about your movement background and what you're doing now?
So, when I was very young, I was always involved in sports. At the age of 15, I started dancing at Springfield Ballet. So, I've always been interested in movement. Continued my dance training all through college. I have a master's of fine arts in modern dance. I performed in Branson for 7 years in a variety of different shows. When I was performing in Branson, I was injured. For 2 years, I had quite a bit of back pain, and I started searching for answers, ways to resolve my back pain, and most of the answers were unsatisfactory. They did very little to alleviate my pain until I discovered Pilates. So I started doing Pilates. After 2 years of back pain, I started taking Pilates. And 6 months later, my back was basically pain-free. Mm-hmm. So that's the point when I started. Well, that's the point when I really recognized that movement could heal the body. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started my training to become a Pilates instructor.
Which is actually interesting because until this moment, Tracy, I didn't realize that you and I met through Pilates and we both came to Pilates through pain.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I came through knee pain from dancing and running and you through back pain.
Wow.
Nice. Well, I was amazed. You know, everything I had tried had not helped. But 6 months of dedicated mind-body exercise basically resolved my pain complaint.
And what do you do now?
Now I work as a manual therapist. So for years I taught Pilates and the progression of my career led me to work with mainly people who were having pain or dysfunction.
Which a lot of people came to see you and I, not because they wanted to get in shape, but because they heard Pilates could help with pain.
Absolutely. That was the bulk of our clientele. Mm-hmm. And that just led me down a path to being able to do hands-on work. I taught kinesiology at the massage school here in Springfield for years. I was able to get my hands on or become a licensed massage therapist through the school. And what I found is I enjoy working with people where I can actually do hands-on work. And then my career as a Pilates instructor, you know, introduced me to a lot of very talented teachers here in town. So, you know, I work with people, and then most of the time I will recommend that they go to a highly skilled Pilates instructor, or there's also an instructor at Body Smith downtown that teaches ABM neuro movement. So a lot of times I'll recommend that they do that as well.
Can you talk about what neuro movement is? I'm not familiar with that.
Neuro movement is a form of movement based on the teachings of Moshe Feldenkrais. But one of his proteges, and maybe his main protege, is a lady named Anat Binal. And I love Moshe Feldenkrais' work. One of my favorite all-time books is called Awareness Through Movement, which is where I really started. Well, I started my initial training in mind-body connection through the Pilates studio, through the Pilates training. But I really expanded that knowledge by reading Feldenkrais' book, Awareness Through Movement. And then I started taking Aaron Owen's class at the studio, and it really just opened all sorts of doors as far as, you know, how movement can become easier if you don't try so hard.
And we should probably tell people that who Feldenkrais was, an Israeli engineer who healed himself through movement from pain. And if we go back a step, probably before we continue, Joseph Pilates healed himself through a sickly childhood and pain to become what some people consider a physical specimen, and then healed soldiers in World War I by hooking up springs to a hospital bed and keeping them moving while they were ailing, and then wound up coming to the United States. A lot of people don't know this, but wound up coming to the United States, and then a lot of dancers and higher-level movers would come to him in order to keep their careers up because they were in pain.
I thought that he started in dance. I thought he started with the ballet, but
no.
You're saying he came to it from pain.
Yes.
His own.
Yes, which we discussed in our intro to the series, that a lot of people come to movement. Some, yes, because they want to lose weight and get fit, but also a lot because they want to become pain-free.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So we were talking the other day about brain being in every part of the body. And, you know, I've sampled your work and have benefited from it directly. And so since then, I've been thinking a lot about the wisdom in the body, and, you know, now reading about specifically about brain and body, and about how we really have this confusion, thinking, you know, in Western thought, we have this idea that our brain is up here in our skull, and that is a part of it, but that it's really all over the body.
Right.
What would you say about that, given how you work?
Well, the thing that I try to tell my clients is that I don't heal people. All I do is try to clear a path for their brains to take the ball and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to get them close enough to the answer that their brain, which I consider the mind-body complex, because there really is no separation between mind and body except for an artificial separation. So all I'm doing with my clients is I'm trying to get them close enough to the answer that their mind-body complex can say, I know what he's trying to do. I can do that. And then their body heals their pain complaint or dysfunction. But I've never considered myself a healer, and I don't. I think that's the farthest thing from what I do. I just try to untangle this mess that we call their nervous system enough for them to heal themselves.
So, Tracy, I just returned from a conference in which I took a class with Eric Franklin, and he pointed out that we've been practicing mind-body exercises such as Pilates, yoga, Tai Chi in this country for quite a while. But we really haven't accepted what that truly meant, that we want to change the body. and that we approach it still as a workout, mm-hmm. only to get leaner, more sleek, lose weight. But he said he finally feels like we're getting to the point in research where we're seeing the importance of changing the mind. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So when people come to you, then are you see them realizing that what they're undergoing is maybe not just a movement, faulty movement pattern or an injury that's occurred, that it could be more like a trapped emotion? And what do you see come of that?
Well, that's a tricky thing as a therapist because, you know, very rarely is the problem where the pain is. So one of the things I have to be careful of with a new client especially is I have to make sure that they understand that I know where their pain is because they just told me. So I have to acknowledge that, and I have to make sure that they know that that's what I'm going to treat. But ultimately, I'll end up working on some other part of the body. And that's quite often a very difficult thing for people to accept. You know, the people come to me usually because they've heard good things about the work I do. But even then, you know, if they tell me their foot hurts and I start working on their knee, they start looking at me like I've lost my mind. But if they bear with me, you know, I can always follow the breadcrumbs and lead right back to where their pain complaint is. Yeah. But I have to be careful, especially because I want to go right to where the problem is.
Right.
And I have to make sure that they know that I'm working on their main complaint,
yeah.
even though I often work somewhere else.
Sure.
See, isn't that just like
yes.
psychotherapy?
Yes.
Exactly.
I know. I'm sitting here thinking I could say all the exact same
exact
things about what we do. And it is, there is this temptation to, you know, as you're listening to someone talk, you know immediately after a while, like,
yeah.
oh, you're saying it's about this, but I know where this is going to go. I
yeah.
know where we
you
always
didn't bond
have to
with
go.
Your mother. We
yes,
know what
like,
happens.
You know, can't we just hurry up and go all the way back there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, that wisdom of you have to pace yourself and make sure that they really know that you understand what they're actually here for.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you accidentally create resistance to the work that you're trying to do. And I have definitely been guilty of trying to go, the shortcut. Like, let's just
yeah.
go straight to the thing.
I
and
do
it's, it doesn't work.
They're not ready.
They're not
yeah.
ready
mm-hmm.
for it. And I imagine that that happens in the body, too. And there has to kind of be a surrender to the process and a trust in you,
mm-hmm.
Kind of as the guide for that, and a trust that you can take them where they want to go. But that means that they have to believe that you're going to know things that they don't know intuitively. And understand on a level that they don't yet. And that takes
yeah.
so much trust. It really does.
Yeah, because he's going to press on their
mm-hmm.
arm, and they're going to think, I didn't come in here for my arm.
Mm-hmm. Why are you touching my arm?
Why are you doing it? So I actually talked to some friends of mine today who have worked with you, who've been your patients, your clients, whatever. And, you know, one of them was laughing and saying, so ask him, what is this voodoo? What is the voodoo that you do? You know, so we were kind of having a fun moment with that, because really you do have to relax and go, okay, there's something I don't know,
mm-hmm.
and I trust this person, and he seems to be doing something that's opposite of what
right.
I thought was going to happen, but
right. but I can feel that it's working, so I'm just going to keep going with it.
I'm just
going
to go with it.
So one of the biggest hurdles to clear with new clients especially is, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of forms of therapy, you have to figure out as quickly as you can where your client is coming from. So in my business, highly skilled movers, people with highly developed central nervous systems, people who like being in their bodies, are much easier to work with than what I call affectionately sentient cinder blocks. You know, these are people who are like...
affectionate term, huh?
They look at their body, as affectionate as possible. These are people who look at their bodies and they're like, who gave me this thing?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it belongs to them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And those people are very difficult to work with, or much more challenging. For one thing, you know, they don't use their bodies as much, or at least they don't use their bodies in a way that really strengthens the connection between mind and body. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, all I'm trying to get is to a point where their mind can actually heal the body. I get is they think that, you know, they have a lot of stress, like a lot of people do, and they feel like working out is a good way to alleviate stress, but they do it in such a way where they're just trying to wear their body out, and that way they think they'll be experiencing less stress and more rest.
But it's actually numbing. It's not actually a healing thing.
Or creating more stress.
Mm-hmm. Dissociating through the exercise. Mm-hmm. So it's mindless.
Exercise has to be hard physically. It has to be painful. Right. I can't make positive changes unless...
unless it hurts.
It hurts.
Yeah. So this is something I'm curious, because I have been suspicious that this is true, and you guys are going to know better than I do. But when I talk to people about their relationship with their bodies in therapy... what I often find for people that work out a lot and kind of do the over-exercise that you're talking about is because they're constantly pushing themselves to a point of pain, they get convinced that being healthy is being able to disconnect from the pain that my body is feeling so that I can keep going in spite of it. And so you get this pattern of things get difficult, and so I dissociate and disconnect and numb out rather than slow down, tune in, pay attention to the messages I'm receiving. And what I've seen is that for people that are chronic overexercisers, they almost traumatize themselves because their natural ability to heal gets disconnected because they've quit being able to listen to their bodies because of the exercise that they're doing. So this is just kind of my observation. Do you guys see that? Like, does that happen?
Completely.
Okay.
And they're doing more harm because then their immune system is suffering.
Their adrenal system can't repair.
They're not going into the rest. They're not doing the true mind-body yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi as it should be. Mm-hmm. In those off days, they want to work as hard as they possibly can.
Right.
And I think we talked about in our opening to the series that there's a difference between hard work sometimes to make physical changes. It's hard, and pain. Mm-hmm. It's never okay to push through pain. You're doing more damage.
Right.
And Tracy can talk to the fact that that body records pain, and that pain becomes kind of like a broken record. Like, you can't move past the pain.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's a pattern. It's a pattern in the body.
It is. And most of the time, the people who do that, the common phrase they use with me if I talk to them about pain is, I push through it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the people who tell me I push through it are people in general that see their bodies as a machine. Your body's not a machine. So, and these are the people who have quite often very little patience for what I do. Because if their body's a machine, then I should be able to find the broken lug nut or whatever. And I should just be able to fix it, you know. Yeah. That's not the way the body works. I can't remember who I heard, but I heard somebody being interviewed about the human body, and he's the one that made me really realize that the human body is a performance. It is different at every moment. And, you know, you've got a trillion cells in your body, each doing amazing things on their own. So to view the body as a machine is really a greatly oversimplified view. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the hardest things about what I do, is if I get a client who thinks, you know, their body's a machine, I should be able to find the one broken thing and fix it, and they should get back to being able to push through it. And if I can't do that, they lose patience with me very quickly. But compensation patterns in the human body can be huge. There can be, for one dysfunction, hundreds of compensations. Mm-hmm. And what I have to do is find the compensation that is high enough on the hierarchy to correct and make a lasting change.
Can you give an example of that? Like when you're talking about compensations, I think I know what you mean. So if I have pain in my foot, it might be because something's going on in my knee or my hip, or the way that I'm holding my shoulders, or because I sit cross-legged too much all day.
Or because you're pissed off.
Or because I'm pissed off and I'm holding tension somewhere and, you know, clamping down all the time. Is that kind of what you mean by compensation?
Absolutely. Okay. And the knee is a prime example, because the knee is rarely a problem in and of itself. It is usually the victim of either the hip or the ankle. Mm. So if you have a hip problem, your knee tries to adjust, and then you come to me because you have a knee problem, but it's actually because of some dysfunction in the hip. But your body prioritizes pain, or most people's do. So if your knee is screaming at you, your hip can't be heard. And this is another tricky thing about what I do, and it may relate to, you know, what psychologists do as well. Once the knee problem, so if I am able to help you resolve your knee problem, you're like, yeah, but now my hip hurts. And you go tell your friends, you know, yeah, he helped my knee, but he did something to my hip. So that's why, you know, I try to explain to people that this process, you need to give me long enough to work with you that we can clear up whatever's in queue.
Right. It's going to the root issue rather than the presenting symptom.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I hear kind of a circular thing, too. I hear kind of a non-linear approach to the, you know, it's not this A to B connection necessarily. You're having to sort of back up and see a bigger picture, mm-hmm. where all of these parts are working together so that it becomes circular.
Absolutely.
System.
Yeah, you really have to zoom out to figure out what's going wrong with your client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's hard because people, especially people who view the human body as a machine, they think you should be able to follow a straight line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way it works. I had a client the other day that I had a fantastic outcome with. She had had a pain complaint for years that nobody could resolve. She came to me longer than most people, because it was so complex. I mean, chronic problems are chronic because they're complex.
Mm-hmm.
But she stuck with me for 10 sessions, and the outcome was really amazing. And she told me the other day, she said, yes, I came to you for 10 sessions, and you never did the same thing twice. And that's exactly how I work. You know, people come to me, they say, I felt much better after the last session, and I know what that means. That means I would like you to do what we did last session again.
Make
this
me
session.
Feel that way again.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By doing the exact same thing. And I'm like, that's not the way it works.
Right.
We have to go from where we left off and find the new thing that's a priority.
That is just like the threads of trauma memory.
Yeah.
Just like that. Yeah. We're working on literal threads,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, if you're 50, that's a pretty long thread.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a lot in that. You know, if you're 6, it's a shorter thread.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is connected on that thread. Everything. There's nothing that is not connected. You can't bring up a subject that doesn't have to do with your trauma that we can't target.
Right.
We're talking EMDR. But I kind of see that in what you're saying, too.
Well, and everything is dynamic. Yeah. So you can't do the same thing twice because the body isn't the same that time as it was the previous time. And I feel like every subsequent session that you have with a client when you're doing EMDR psychotherapy, you are meeting with a new iteration of that person every time, because if you've done good work, things should have shifted, even if it's just a little bit, and you still have to constantly be looking and double checking and saying, what's new now? How has this morphed into something different? And I don't know if you have this happen to you, Deborah, but frequently I have somebody come in and say, okay, we need to do the machine today. Like, this needs to happen. This it worked really well last time, so let's just do that. You know, no debriefing about, have you felt between now and then? Have you had any symptoms come up? Like, hold on. Like, let's just talk a second. Like, nope, that fixed something. That felt good. That's what I want. We need to do the machine. And invariably, those are the sessions where I need to say, no, we're putting the machine away. Because there's that pressure and that push to hurry up and make it feel better. And usually that's because we're trying to avoid a bit of work that we know we really, really need to do. But we don't like slow work. We like that, you know, that instant feel good. Mm-hmm. And I think our clients struggle with that, too. I know that I certainly still do.
Oh, definitely.
Which even happens in general fitness. I mean, Tracy and I can both say that we have clients that came to us, or Tracy and me currently, I want to do the same Pilates workout every time and don't change it.
Right. Really?
It's comfortable. People they know the they can thing. Do it. They think that it's going to keep delivering results when we know then that's not changing the body. Yeah. The body's going to max out and then there's no neurological changes and so you're going to stop getting results. Mm-hmm. But there are many people.
They don't like the new.
They don't want to learn anything new. They don't want to change anything. They want to come in and know exactly what they're going to get and be doing. Mm-hmm.
I can understand that, though, because I feel like when I have approached exercise and movement things, that is exactly how I approach it. And I think the reason is because, and I know this is the way with yoga, I like certain poses because I can do those poses, right? Like, I can get into that pose and not feel like, you know, a part of me is about to fall off and I don't feel like, you know, a fool for, you know, the way that I look in front of everybody. So I want to do those poses over and over, not because I'm there to challenge my body and to work on the mind-body connection, but because I want to do comfortable exercise.
And the class that Tracy's talking about with Aaron, I have clients that go to that class and then come to Pilates, and sometimes they'll say, well, I really wanted to do that back workout, and we've not ever gone back to that back workout, and we never do the same thing. But then they talk about how great they feel, how much they enjoyed it. It's like,
Well, that's kind of funny. Well, and I wanted to bring up, too, emotion. I want to keep going back to that.
Yeah.
I had a session with you one time, and I don't remember what you did, but it sort of released all these tears, you know, just, I think I called it a faucet that got turned on, and I was just, literally, I couldn't control it. It just kept coming. And you said something like, that's the big kahuna, or, you know, that's the main event kind of thing.
Absolutely. In the work I do, emotions are quite often the top of the food chain. So if you have a hierarchy of dysfunction, if an emotion comes up in a session, then I basically know I've got a dysfunction that is high enough on the hierarchy to make a very profound change. Mm. Now, in the work I do, sometimes I do emotional work that is with the clients actively participating in, on a conscious level, on a problem that they know exists. But the best corrections, I believe, are made by the subconscious or unconscious mind. So a lot of times I'll make emotional corrections with my client, and they feel an emotional release. Quite often it's tears, but they don't quite understand why they're having tears.
To them.
Yeah, because they don't have any conscious awareness of what I was actually working with them to clear. Mm-hmm. And I like those corrections the best because they're usually very relaxing for the client. And even when I do an emotional correction or emotional work with a client that's dealing with a problem that they're thinking about, I'll ask them to, you know, hear me say, think about this, but I tell them, I really don't need you to think about that. All I need you to do is hear me say that. And then their unconscious mind will help them make the correction.
Yeah.
And it happens in a very relaxing and non-traumatic way.
Mm-hmm. And spontaneous. It's not them trying to create something. It's not them evoking a certain feeling their brain and their body created spontaneously for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, Tracy, can you go back and talk about that analogy of body as a performance? I feel like there's a whole bunch of stuff there because
oh, yeah.
that concept of thinking of body as machine is very ingrained in our culture. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have a good replacement analogy. So can you talk about that idea of body as performance more?
Well, I think when you were talking a little bit earlier about clients coming in and wanting to do the same thing because they got a good outcome,
mm-hmm.
That, you're right, the idea of the body as a machine is ingrained in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most challenging things I do as a therapist is try to get people away from that idea that every time they come see me, they are a new person. Mm-hmm. They are different than mm-hmm. they were before. They may have the same pain complaint, but pain complaints can be in the body for all sorts of different reasons. I think one of the biggest differences between what I do and what's commonly done in Western medicine is Western medicine looks at the body more like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
So Western medicine commonly thinks that if you have pain, your pain is going to be traced back to a structural problem.
Yeah.
But in what I do, I think that most pain is caused by afferentation problems. So sensory receptors in the human body, and this is based on my most recent, well, my second to most recent certification, which was in proprioceptive deep tendon reflex technique. This amazing gentleman named Dr. Jose Palomar discovered, and I believe he is actually very accurate and correct on this, that most pain is from faulty sensory receptor signals being sent to the brain, and then the brain and spinal cord, if it makes it to the brain, but if it makes it just to the spinal cord, the spinal cord or brain or central nervous system making good decisions based on bad information.
Hmm.
So that's a huge difference. Western medicine really views the body as a machine.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for a structure. We're looking for a broken lug nut or washer or something we can replace or shave off or change somehow. But really, if you think of the body as a performance, the body's constantly trying to compensate for dysfunction. Once that compensation doesn't work, it's adding another compensation on top of that. So you're always changing to make your body function better by adding compensations. So that is your body as a performance.
So making good decisions on bad information might sound like I'm a sick person, I'm a weak person, I'm not a strong person, I can't do this, I shouldn't. I'm thinking about people I've heard mm-hmm. at the Bodysmith talking about, I can't do this, I shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
These sets about what their bodies just can't do because they have an impairment.
Fear.
Fear. Is that what you mean?
that's part of it. And that brings up a point about how everything, at least in my experience, everything in the human body works forwards and backwards. So if you have a physical complaint, you can work on that part of the body to help resolve it. But a lot of people come to me for anxiety, insomnia. I work with people on all sorts of pain complaints or any type of dysfunction, you know, digestive distress. I've found that if I can trace that, let's say, anxiety back to a part of their body, then working on that part of their body will help with the anxiety. But if they come to me for a pain complaint, if I can trace that pain complaint to anxiety, then I can work on the anxiety and the pain complaint gets better. So the body is never a one-way street. You can always approach it from either direction. And I think the one way I try to explain this best to people, which I stole this from Professor Fink, who is one of my favorite professors, I think, from Yale or Stanford. He talks about how Valium is actually a muscle relaxer. But doctors prescribe Valium for anxiety. Because the body is always sending information to the brain. So if you have tight muscles, those tight muscles are always sending a message to the brain saying, hey, we're tight down here. And the brain says, oh, those muscles are tight. Whoever, you know, must be having a lot of stress.
Something must be wrong.
So we should turn up the volume on their stress level to help them
figure this out.
Or, you know, the brain might be thinking you're being attacked by a bear. So we need to crank up the adrenaline. We need to crank up all of these stress hormones because your brain's trying to help do what your body is telling your brain it's doing. So if you think about the body functioning in that way, you think about movement. If movement can actually help you de-stress, then it will turn down the volume on your anxiety or on all sorts of other, you know, emotional issues. It will have a very calming effect.
I feel like, in a nutshell, that explains so much about why the symptoms of trauma and PTSD are what they are. And having that language to explain to people, like, this is why that's going on. This is why you're having these kinds of reactions. And I love that idea of good decisions based on bad information, because to me, that's de-shaming. That's telling you you are a healthy individual that is trying like crazy to adapt to a really unhealthy situation, and this is the result of that. So if we can get good information in there, you have everything within you that you need in order to be healthy and be pain-free. And, you know, when we're dealing with emotional stuff, a lot of what we end up going back to is the traumatic belief system. Whatever we've gone through, we've walked away from that with something in our belief system that is telling us something negative.
A fear belief. Sick. There's something wrong with me.
Yeah, I'm not good enough. I can't handle this. And our symptoms are always a mere reflection of that negative belief system. And somebody's belief system about their bodies is always going to show up in the way that they do movement. And I think what you're talking about is just such a good encapsulation of how that's true with the emotional stuff, that's true with our bodies, and the way that we heal, both of those things ends up being the same. We have to get new information in there. We have to get a new understanding and appreciation for what our bodies and our brains are really capable of. So, with your permission, I'm just going to steal that phrase.
Okay.
Because I'm going to latch on to that.
I guarantee you, everything I'm saying, I've learned from somebody else.
Well, that's the best way, though, right?
That's
we
right.
Disseminate
exactly.
it from
yes.
each other.
Yes, exactly. That's so true.
Yes, so a word about depression. I just want to throw this out there. We know that when people are depressed, their bodies hurt more. Mm-hmm. We know that they have more back pain, more joint pain, more headaches. And, you know, so a lot of people would maybe look at that in a linear way and say, well, depression causes the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from our conversation, I really want to kind of underscore that stepping back from that, it's maybe not that simple. It's maybe a circular
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
There's pain, and my body is interpreting that afferentation, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's yes. not linear necessarily.
It's not linear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a circle. There's a circle of information.
Yeah. I actually had someone explain this to me one time as when you're sick, like when you get a cold, you get the flu, your brain actually encourages you to feel a little bit depressed. Like we've all experienced that. You get sick and you kind of feel
yes.
down. And that actually makes a whole lot of sense because when we get depressed, we lay down more often.
So it's adaptive.
We slow down, which actually lets our body heal. But if we're constantly getting signals that we're sick, and so our brain does this very adaptive, very helpful thing. It says, okay, slow down. Be still. Don't do so much. It's trying to help us. It's trying to give us the energy and the space to heal. But the information we're getting is wrong. We're not actually mm-hmm. sick. We don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, like that is one of my favorite definitions of depression. And the reason why it still goes back to it's bad information.
Mm-hmm. Bad information.
And I'm thinking a lot about what we've talked about tonight. Coming through in our Parkinson's clients that come in for rock steady boxing, and going back to what Tracy said, but your affectionate cinder block. The clients that come in with Parkinson's that have been movers up till being diagnosed with Parkinson's have better results from continuing exercise, and we see faster improvements than the ones that come to us that have been doing nothing mm-hmm. and are still maybe a little emotionally, mentally resistant to mm-hmm. exercise. That changes as they start exercising and they see results. And also the ones that know when their body needs to rest, mm-hmm. like, okay, I've done enough. My tremors are getting worse versus, the ones that let themselves become, it is depressing,
mm-hmm.
but the ones that push through the depression and know that at some point I have to continue to move my body and listen to when it needs to rest, but yet make that emotional connection that I'm going to be okay mm-hmm. if I keep exercising. Does that make sense? Like
mm-hmm.
I can kind of move past, yeah, balancing the rest with the, I need to exercise to feel better. I don't always feel good, but not letting it depress them.
Right, right. Well, and I think in a case like that, the piece of the puzzle that we have a lot of power over is we can get up and move.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can find a piece where we can actually make a change and do something with it, let's focus on that because it is so circular. You end up influencing all these other things that we have less control over because we've focused on the one that we do. And I think that's the case with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them think every ailment that they have is related to the Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my Parkinson's. That's mm-hmm. my Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. When a lot of times, then if we can get them to understand, well, you're still a whole being and what you're doing and how you're eating and how you're exercising or
all influences all of it.
It's not just because you have Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Well, and Parkinson's is on that list of autoimmune disorders that has a high connection to early childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can begin thinking about it even, you know, sort of going that far back and looking at this bigger picture.
Yeah, and the belief system that creates about our bodies and about our ability to be healthy and move and all of that. That's
right.
True.
Right.
Well, so we probably need to wrap up, but before we do, one last question, Tracy. For people that feel like the sentient cinder blocks that are listening to this going, I am one of those. Because I would probably, at least at points, put myself in that category. For those that are, you know, feeling like I have no idea what a mind-body connection is supposed to look like, I know that mine isn't healthy, what do you feel like are some good kind of first steps, like some really basic things to start doing to try to begin to make that connection and try to heal that disconnection?
Things that send positive signals to the brain, which can be meditation, yoga, Pilates, dance. You know, they've done studies about if you just smile, you're sending a signal to your brain. Even if you're very unhappy, your brain is getting a signal, they're smiling. So then your brain starts to act on that information, and the brain will do things to reinforce you smiling. And I don't know a lot of the science behind rocksteady boxing, but I've worked with some of the people that go to rocksteady and have seen dramatic improvements. And on the most basic level, your body is up and you're moving and you're throwing punches and your brain's saying, oh, this is great. They're up and they're fighting and they're having fun. Mm-hmm. And the brain jumps in and reinforces that. So, you know, they've also proven, studies have also proven, if you stand in big postures,
power stances,
your body starts to release testosterone.
Yeah.
So even if you feel horrible, just simple things like smiling for 2 minutes or standing in a big posture or anything to send a signal to your brain that says, okay, they're happy.
Yeah.
We need to reinforce that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that would be the starting point, because a lot of people who don't have a history of mind-body exercise, even people who just go to the gym to push through with pain and wear their bodies out, they could take the time to smile on their way to work, or they could take 2 minutes to stand in one of these power poses, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that sends positive information to your central nervous system, your central nervous system will act on that positive information.
So just start somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea that you don't have to add a big new thing immediately.
Yeah.
Just as simple as, I drive to work every day, so while I do that, I'm either going to sing or take deep breaths or roll the window down and feel it, or just smile. You know, those are such simple things that actually do make a difference, because our brain wants to respond to what our body is doing. Makes sense. Very cool. Well, Tracy, thank you so much for being with us. This was absolutely fascinating, and I feel like we could probably talk for a few more hours about all this, because I think we only covered about half the questions, but and maybe we'll be able to have you back sometime, because I think we would love that. But thank you all for joining us, and we will be back next time with another episode in the series of Movement as Healing.
Thank you so much for listening to Reconceive. Don't forget to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. Follow us at Reconceive Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, and find us on our website at beyondstudio417.com/reconceive. And if anything you've heard today has made you wonder if it's time to reach out for help, please don't ignore that. Message us for assistance in finding a qualified therapist in your area. We would enjoy helping you in that way. From all of us here at Reconceive, see you next time.